This feature has been brought to you by Slot Foundation, which needs your support to continue projects like these. Information on this recording and access to other recordings is available online at slot.org.
One of the things that came out on Monday, and we asked Paolo if this was an important issue for him, and he said he wanted to bring it back, which is that Catherine Ingram mentioned to Paolo that he was born in 1931, the year that Verzin Architecture was published, and that what kind of reflections does he have on that particular period, and he said that it's very important for him and for his thinking. So we'd like to begin this with a conversation about those early sort of modernist years.
So really, I am born in 1931, but I became an architect after 25 years. So I have lived as a child the fashion and the situation in which modern architecture become something of a generally diffused. I remember that for me it was a real problem when I begin to study architecture, to life in a city in which modernity was presque absent. There, in the day after the war, the heritage of modernity in Rome was an heritage of research. There was few modern buildings, especially the postal offices made from Libera and Ridolfi, and some low-cost houses. But the modernity that I can see through the magazine and the book was something radically different. So for me, it was really a big problem, this disparity between the idea of modernity and the reality of Rome. But at the same time, one of the first books I read on modern architecture was the Gideon one. And Gideon proposed the Baroque architecture, Baroque way, Baroque art, like something necessary to arrive from the Renaissance to the modernity. I remember the connection between two images, one of Sant'Ivo La Sapienza and the other the portrait of the mother of Boccioni. And for me was really something of exciting, the possibility to find the modernity in the Baroque tradition, and especially in Borromini, for which I have a big interest from my infancy. So, certainly, the 31 is the date of the exhibition of Philip Johnson on international architecture. But really, for me, modernity was something to understand and at the same time to correct, because the difficulty to understand for common people the tradition of modernity was something on which is necessary to reflect. This is typical of my generation. I am born in the same year of Valdorossi, for example. And for us was very important to understand the value of this rupture between tradition and modernity.
We'll get to that rupture in a moment, but you also talked about Italy in the post-World War II period and neorealism cinema.
Yes.
And how exciting that moment and how powerful that moment was for you. Can you talk a little bit about that period?
And the politics of that period.
And the politics of the period.
There was a belief in the political.
Yes, for example, the relation with fascism was, for my generation, the relation with a big mistake that was unbelievable. And was especially the necessity after the fascism to reconnect Italian culture with European culture. I remember as something of painful the fact that the French was after the declaration of the war assalita, come si dice? Assaulted from Italy, and they speak about pugnalata nella schiena.
Yeah, stop in the back.
I was a fanatic of Rimbaud in this period, so was really a pain to consider that the relation with the French was a relation based on war.
And you also talked about the neorealism film. You want
to? Yes, this to explain the condition of a young in the Italy after the war. There was a special condition in which the intellectual world was united to express a reality through a direct approach. And I remember the importance of films. We have seen the first masterpiece of neorealism like an open window, and really in this moment the intellectual world in Italy was engaged with politics to realize a new form of freedom and democracy. So I remember this year like a fantastic period in which each day, each week happened something in Italian culture, a film, a romance, the poetry of Pasolini, something really exciting for young people, and that give a big trust in the possibility to create a new world. And the politics engagement was participated from young people, and there was something strongly exciting, and because was necessary to choice, was necessary to have a trust and at the same time decision. So modernity become a problem. Mm. Become a problem because the modernity is in contrast with popularity, with possibility of understanding from common people. So the neorealism in the cinema as the contrary of the avant-garde. And this key is important to understand the fact that when I organized the Biennale in the 80s, I was still trusting in this new type of artistic activity, in which the sensibility for what is popular, it's very important.
Yeah. Today, Denise talked about she and Bob Venturi's thinking about this kind of work as, for her, coming out of advocacy planning and social engagement. And you, could you talk a little bit about how that figured into, you know, what we now call postmodernism, wrongly probably, but...
Denise had suggested that in a way they had been inclined to not use the word postmodernism, but that it, when they did use it, it was misunderstood, and what they fundamentally were going at was an understanding of social planning and advocacy, and that was what postmodernism meant for them.
For them, yeah.
Well, there are two type of engagement. The engagement of town planning, that was a theoretical engagement. Mm-hmm. And the engagement to produce an architecture understandable. This was a strong effort of all the generation of architects that has made the battle for modernity. In Italy, especially Gardella, Albini, Rogers, and in Rome, Ridolfi, was in search of a connection with the tradition. And Rogers has spoken about the importance to dialogue with the past, dialogue with the surrounding making the project in connection with the surrounding. And it spoke of preesistenze ambientali, that is a concept very important for my generation. So my generation was in the same direction of our major brothers, but with a more strong approach to the popularity of architectural language. This is very important to explain the fact that to have Bob Venturi in the exhibition was for us really very important. The key problem is to have the collaboration of Venturi, because Venturi has become the symbol of a new sensibility. When he arrived in Rome, he has seen the city in a very different way, a non-ideological way. He have studied and appreciated things that was absolutely avoided from interest in that moment. So Venturi was the prophet of this new sensibility, to choose with absolute freedom and at the same time search the possibility to use architecture like a social battle for to have a society more just, a just society. Naturally, viewing from now that was illusions. But each one life through illusion.
You also found in Ventura's work, you found a humility. Could you talk about this idea of humility that you associate postmodernism with?
Humility.
Humility.
Humility. Yes. Yes, this is really one of the key: the sense of humor and the humility. The sense of humor is very, very important for our generation. It is impossible to decodify the architecture we have produced without this sense of humor. Also, Rossi, that is, can be interpreted like very rigorous, rigorous theorician. Speaking with him, the sense of humor is the fact that is more emerging in the discussion. So, in the Biennale, there was the search to express in a clear way this approach to architecture. Based on freedom, based to abolish the inhibitions of modernity. My first book I have written was The Inibizioni dell'Architettura Moderna.
Yeah. Inhibition of modern architecture.
Inhibition, because in a relation with tradition, modernity avoid any contact in a strong way, and in certain cases the relation with the tradition, like in Le Corbusier, is nascosta, hidden. It's hidden in a sort of a filigrana.
Yeah.
So, we consider the relation with the past as something of rich, not necessary to hide. And for example, reading the work of Terrani, confronting the work of Terrani in the two periods, we consider that in the Danteum, Terrani has realized a third moment of relation with the past, in which there is not more inhibition,
yeah,
but is a relation more sincere. This is the spirit in which is born the exhibition.
Right.
To realize something like a real street.
Right.
In a moment in which also in America there was some social battle to preserve the main street, the commercial street, against the speculation that want to abolish some element of the city. Very important.
So the Strada Novissima, you said, was about this battle to have architects confront other architects on the street. Here's the Strada Novissima in the Cordovia.
Was very important, the human scale and the comparison between the work of different architects. We have made a rule given to the different architects to obtain a certain harmony between the facades.
Yeah.
Naturally, in the facades there are strong differences, more strong than we desire. But in a certain sense, has worked the light, like a revival of the traditional street, like something of common, as the space of social ritual. In Italy, we speak of struscio. Struscio because the people touch each one the other.
Yeah, touches each other slightly. So you go back and forth the same street, and and we have a name for that. That's the struscio.
So the maximum satisfaction was when there is inside the Via Novissima many people, and they are in the same condition created by the struscio.
And you talked about...
Anyway, I say always, we have an idea organizing this exhibition. The exhibition was a modification of this idea. And after, from the exhibition is born something of completely different from what we desire. It's born, in a certain sense, the star system, because 20 architects, 11 of these architects are part of the system. And it's very strange that the more humil of the architects in this moment was Frank Gehry. And he became the more brilliant of the stars. And in a direction completely different from the direction for which he was chosen in the exhibition, because he was chosen like an American realist, because express until the 80s the complex condition of life in the States, and especially so really this exhibition for me it was a big because I think it's to desire to realize another is to understand the value of what is realized.
So it's not just that it's not just that postmodernism was misunderstood, but also the exhibition was misunderstood.
In part from the people that participated, but especially from in the debate, because it was considered a formal research. They speak about the village built in Russia.
The Temkin Village. Yeah. That's what the critics called it.
Yeah. So the social inspiration was completely ignored.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that we talked about earlier today was, that Tafuri, as an Orthodox Marxist, was resistant to this, but Alderossi was supportive. It was important for you that that the institution of the Biennale that you were inaugurating with regard to architecture, it was important that there be a relation between the institution of the Biennale and the city. Could you talk a bit about that? Why it was so important to you that the Biennale and the city be understood to be in a dialogue with each other?
Well, the relation was very scarce because with the School of Architecture there was a disparity of orientation. So we have inside the group of Biennale Rossi and Brusatin, for example. But Tafuri outside consider the exhibition absolutely wrong. Anyway, when was director Rossi after my experience, Rossi organized a competition of and offer them different designs about the Ponte dell'Accademia. And also Venturi gave a very interesting project. But at the same time, the city of Venice reconstructed the old bridge without any interest for the offering of the Biennale. So the relation was only with many architects living in Venice, but not with the city as an organization. And the difficulty in Italian politics was the fact that many architects was inside the parties, but the politics responsible of the management of the city was absolutely indifferent to the proposal of architects.
How do you feel about the Biennale today and its the kind of positions that it takes or doesn't take? I mean, it's become such an incredible, important part of the architectural world.
Yes,
since 1980.
This is a real, it's an occasion to meeting for architects all around the world. And so, and I think this is the product also of the first exhibition, because it has created a big battle, a big discussion. And so, discussion create interest.
Uh-huh.
But also, I recognize that Biennale has considered the importance of architectural section. I was president for other 8 years. Uh-huh. And during my presidency, the director of the section was Rossi Tarco. And so was with Dalco the exhibition became more structural important because he has generalized the system to the participation of the different nations mm-hmm. officially.
Yeah.
In my exhibition, the structure of visual art Biennale was not adapted to architecture.
Right.
We have made an exhibition completely free. Actually, you know, each important nation has a pavilion which we organize an independent exhibition.
Earlier today we were speaking about how for you the point of the Biennale was to open up the city, and one of the ways you did this was through the reclamation of the Arsenale. Mm-hmm. And you were not just organizing an exhibition, you were opening up the city by opening up the Arsenale. Could you speak a bit about that?
The merit that also my enemies recognize my Biennale is to have finally obtained from government the use of the Arsenale that became for Biennale a space of expansion. Fantastic.
Yeah.
And it was really a miracle to have the Arsenale, because it was full of arms of the first Mondial war.
Yeah.
So it was necessary to eliminate all of these elements, really to make this in a few months was really a miracle.
Yeah, it is. It's always a miracle. That
and also the Teatro del Mondo. Actually, it was absolutely impossible to have authorization to make something like this. That is gone also to Dubrovnik. In Italy, very different from the actual.
Can you talk just a bit more, maybe then we'll move on, but can you talk a bit more about Aldo's Teatro del Mundo, and how that was emblematic of a temporary use of the city that was very important to you?
Yes. For example, Teatro del Mundo is born from the consideration of the spectacular city for excellence, because in Venice the spectacle was considered like a necessity.
Yeah.
And all the city is made to have the possibility. Originally the Teatro del Mundo in the 16th century was opened palcoscenic.
Open stage.
Yes, but Aldo has interpreted in a different way, because he was especially concerned to the dialogue with the monuments of the Bacino di San Marco. And so I remember that he wanted to create something 20 meters high.
Yeah.
And when he said to me, must be 20 meters high, was really in crisis, because there was a problem also of stability,
yeah,
to create something like this.
Right.
Anyway, the structure is made from tubolari innocenti.
They are these metal pipes that we usually use in construction.
So it was very heavy, and this gave stability. But to arrive with the Teatro del Mundo to Dubrovnik would be another miracle.
And then it went around the Adriatic after. Or no, the Mediterranean, you said. It went into different ports and they performed plays in there.
Costeggiato.
Yeah, he went along the coast.
Yeah.
Right.
And it was important to you that...
Small distance from the coast. But, if we'll arrive, wind,
yeah,
tempest,
it's over.
You also had associated this with the theater, the Biennale for theater.
Yeah, what?
He did it with the theater Biennale to pay for it.
Earlier today we were talking about how it was important that it was not just embedded within an architecture biennale, but also that there was an association to the theater biennale, and there was an interdisciplinary.
Yes, the Teatro del Mondo was made in collaboration with the theater section of the Biennale, guided from Scaparro.
Yeah.
It's very important. We have played in the Teatro del Mondo.
Oh, no. We went back. We showed Aldo's entrance to the Arsenal.
This is also Aldo.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe we should talk about the mosque a little bit. Let's talk about, in 1976, you got the commission to design the mosque and Islamic Cultural Center, right? And then in 1982, you devoted the Venice Biennale to Islamic architecture. Can you talk a little bit about why you thought that was important as a theme, and what you learned from it, and how that became part of your own architecture?
Well, for us, it was very important to the history of modernity and Islam, because Islam has refused modernity until the years 50.
Yeah.
And after has adopted an eclecticism in which Islamic elements are present inside structure of classical heritage with really big pastiche. Our idea was to use the richness of Islamic tradition like
nourishing
for modern architecture, interpreted in a modern way, not through citations, so on. And so the exhibition was useful to see what they have made and what is possible to make. And in the same time, we have dedicated a big space to Hassan Fathi that discovered like a fantastic architect in which the traditional form is not used in a traditional way, but like a system of social transformation. So, also this exhibition was in the same direction of the Biennale, of the Bienovissima.
We're trying to get the images up here to show you the mosque in Rome. This is
well, at the same time, I made the effort to create in Rome a Roman mosque.
This is it here.
Considering that the Islamic architecture is very different according to the tradition of the place, because in Iran is absolutely different from the architecture of Maghreb or Turkey.
And this is a Roman mosque.
Present in all this type of mosque are the interlacing arches. So I adopted this element because it was adopted also from Guarini in San Lorenzo Church in Torino, according also with the chapel of Borromini dedicated to Re Maggi.
Earlier today we were talking about how you're concerned that there's been a divorce between the Western and Islamic approaches to architecture. There's a misunderstanding that they're not intertwined. Could you talk about, for you, how you approach Islamic architecture and Western architecture?
Really, in the document of the competition I have won, was explained the necessity to create something connected with the city. And the city has refused before a project in Islamic style. So this project was accepted for the Islamic people because corresponding to the necessity of the Islamic ritual, but also for the fact that it was in agreement with the surrounding landscape.
So this is, you were saying this is a Roman mosque, and it's specific to this tradition that of the Baroque also that you were...
Well, we have considered the fact that in Islamic tradition is present some elements of a classical tradition, because the places in which is born Islamic tradition are places in which Roman architecture and also Hellenistic architecture has produced fantastic monuments. And in some Islamic countries like Tunisia and Algeria also, there are some buildings realized with the same technique and with the same forms that in the Roman period. And for example, in the mosque we have taken the porch like a strong element that is typical of Islamic but is derived from Roman architecture. The old Rome was calculated from an archaeologist, many kilometers, square kilometers of porches, columnar. So in the Mosque of Rome there is a revival of this approach absolutely absent in the actual city. But I think it's important to consider the tradition as something on which reflect a subject of reflections, not only source forms. So this, but especially in the mosque, I have studied the light, the role of the light, suggested from a surah of the Quran, in which one speaks of light on light. But also for the fact that the light is the typical element of a religious building. And I give in this case two different effects. The light coming from the eye to the low, and the light coming from low to high to express the sense of prayer. So outside there is a finite and longer from which light comes from low to high, corresponding to the Quran citation. So the metaphor of light coming from the world, that is typical of all of the revelated religions, was very clear and understandable.
Could you talk about the use of, maybe transitioning away from the discussion of Islamic architecture and returning to the discussion of the Baroque, can you talk a bit about why you use a fisheye lens and how that's for you maybe an attempt to communicate the dynamism of movement? Why do you, for instance, in the case of this image, why did you use that fisheye lens to photograph this architectural space?
Are you talking about the photograph actually?
Yeah, we had a discussion earlier today about the use of the fisheye.
He uses that a lot.
Yeah, the fisheye. I use many times fisheye because it express our perception of architecture that is not limited to the field in which we have a clear image. But, for example, we cut the movement in a relation you can find. I don't see my hands, but I see the movement. This is, I think, is very important for the perception of space. And I have always made in my architecture to dilate the perception of the space, yeah. To give the idea that the space is not limited to the viewing field. So the photographic, the camera is not only something useful to recreate images, but also a system of measurement.
Measurement, yeah. At this point, we've been going for about an hour. Is there anyone that wants to ask Paolo a question? Or everyone way in the back.
There's a microphone that's coming to you.
The tendency in contemporary life today is in designing cities has, and even now moving towards even global scale, is to increase the scale of projects and the scale of design, even almost now to global levels. And as you do that, you inevitably create this distance between yourself and the project you're designing and the people for whom you think you're designing it. And it becomes even more remote now because of the impact of finance. That becomes another kind of layer between the design and the community in the sense that the money tends to dictate so much of the outcome, or has such a stranglehold on these kinds of design questions. And I'm wondering if you have something that you can add to that discussion.
And so I agree completely with this consideration. The human scale is dependent from the size of space, but it's possible also to give a human scale to big spaces through elements of that keep the possibility to relate human scale with a more big scale. This is typical of some architects, for example, Michelangelo, in which there are different strati.
Layers.
Different layers, strongly expressed from architectural forms. And so the human scale is confronted with a bigger scale.
Yeah.
Anyway, I am completely in agreement on the fact, for example, that actually architecture become always more gigantic. And this is certainly not corresponding with the economy. And I think our society is oppressed from the idea of the development.
Yeah.
Development of the consumerism is the typical expression of this necessity to grow, to continue. Actually, in Europe, it's very diffused the idea to stop the growth and to reconsider the world in a less dynamic condition, because this dynamism arrive to consequence certainly not positive for the condition of our way of living. And the gigantesque is certainly one aspect of this ideology of growth, continuous, inarrestable growth. All the prevision, all the statistics extended to some centuries reveal type of world not more habitable from human
generation. Earlier today you had said on a similar note that economics has become the new religion and politics is absent, and you had asked what would be the role of the architect if development stops. Could you speak about what would be the role of the architect if development were to stop?
Well, I think with big interest the idea of an architecture to create this condition to stop the development. I have studied, I teach a new matter called geoarchitectura. It's a world created from Le Corbusier many years ago, but I think in architecture it's possible to realize this revolution, to consider the development not so important. It's possible, for example, the auto-construction, it's possible to reevaluate local tradition. It's possible to consider the economical aspect of construction not in function of the publicity, but in function of the real necessity. And We can stop with the city of the vast,
of waste.
Actually, we live in cities of the waste. It's unbelievable. When I was a young people, to destroy bread was considered sacrilege. And now each one of us, each day, give part of bread this carica.
Yeah, a lot of bread gets just wasted today.
Did somebody else take another question? Anybody else? Okay.
I don't know where to start with the questions. I guess my first question is a comment that OMA was part of this 1980 Venice Biennale. Everybody else had a quite a different work.
Yeah.
And OMA would certainly be against any kind of postmodern judgment that there are any kind of postmodern, or they're producing any kind of postmodern work. And the second thing that I find impressive is that post-war architecture in Italy is usually considered to be the beginning of postmodernism with Tora Velasca. And I'm so impressed that Professor Portoghesi is talking actually about futurism, this kind of this aspect of architectural culture that has to do with popular, which was not that much in, as you say about Bergotti and Rogers, they were more elitists. They didn't really look at popular culture that much. So this is just a comment.
Yeah.
But something on a, I just made a comment, but I actually have a question. And that's, how do you see a relationship between a history, nature, and geography? Because I know that you wrote a book on nature, and a lot of your work is about geometry. And just because our students are dealing so much with geometry and what's the nature of nature, I just wanted to hear your opinion on that, especially when it comes from a person who appreciates history and tradition so much. So I wonder how those come together.
Mm-hmm. Big subject.
Well, I think so I have two points of view absolutely connected, because the history of architecture is the expression of the dialogue between man and nature. The growing of Greek architecture is understandable only relating to symbolic value and the connection with nature. But in all the period of the history of architecture, the nature is present. It's actually that we consider the nature like something opposed to history. My effort in the book was to demonstrate that the observation of nature was necessary to create architecture. Also Vitruvio gave the idea that architecture is born after the discovering of fire, because the man has pleased the effect of fire and has discovered the importance of society, of language, and architecture. So, three elements strongly connected from nature. Now, the inspiration from nature is against the inspiration from history, and so create architecture without human scale, without the connection with the city, for example, because don't pass through the archetypes, but arrive directly through the computer to the suggestion of some elements of nature. But I think in a second moment, probably this approach to nature will reveal the fact that knowing history is possible to eliminate many mistakes. History, for example, the idea, the expansion of the space is connected with the gable. And so it's important to create domes, but not without sustaining element.
Vertical,
yes.
Pillars or
columns? Not necessary to define it. It's only what the
vertical support.
Support, what the old people denominate the special architectural theme. Anyway, I think that it's typical of the fact that our after my book on nature and architecture, I published, I think, 20 or 22 books on this subject with a completely different approach. Not with any reference to my work, that is probably inactual, because the nature is so popular, like a source of suggestions. But few people made the effort to understand the relation with human mankind and nature. The aspect, the typical aspect of this period, the last 20 years, is to consider the man in the tabula rasa. Yeah. But this is not true. It's absolutely not true. The man conquests the element of his mankind gradually. So this theory is especially frequented from Lev Kolas. It's a theory that is not the substrate of history, but also of philosophy or the human type of knowledge. This is my statement, but
okay.
It's a subjective point of view. Okay.